For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks to Toby for the update. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on The Fan. The exclusive sponsor of this show is the law firm of Condori and Murad. They can guide you and your family in the right direction, help you draft a will, set up a revocable trust, or create a healthcare power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them G&D sent you. You can score a great discount. kmlawyers.com. Nats back in action against the Phillies tonight. Another RBI yesterday for James Wood. If you don't have your James Wood gear from our merch shop, what are you waiting for? Cruz Wood 24. Dylan Cruz could be coming to the big league soon enough. And we've got Wood shirts both available for you. Get yours now at 1067thefanshop.com. Let's go to the BetQL guest hotline and welcome onto the program Jordan Schultz, NFL newsbreaker and insider, who has been all over all kinds of NFL news over the last few weeks and throughout the offseason. Jordan, you're on in D.C. with Grant Paulson and Danny Ruye. How are you?
Hey, guys. Doing great. Thank you.
Thank you for the time. We appreciate you. So why don't we start with the big Matthew Judon trade that just went down yesterday? The Patriots sending a legitimate edge rusher. He was averaging a sack a game for a month before he got hurt last year. Double-digit sack seasons back-to-back before that. He goes to Atlanta. They really needed pass rush help. And they gave up a third-round pick back to the Patriots. What'd you make of this deal from both sides?
So I think you got to start with Atlanta clearly wanting a pass rusher for quite some time. If you go back to last year, they wanted to get Montez Sweat. They were unable to get him. He goes to Chicago. Ironically, Chicago was also in on Matthew Judon. Now, Judon was offered real money from New England, did not want to be there, was very clear. He's only making $6.5 million next year. And Atlanta's thinking, to your point, here's a guy who, yes, he's coming off of a torn pec, but when healthy, is one of the better pass rushers in football. He's versatile. He turned 32 yesterday, still got some juice. And if they don't restructure him, then he hits free agency, and he's going to be very motivated, you know, to have a big-time season. And I think Atlanta has felt like, and you obviously saw they get Justin Simmons yesterday, that the missing piece for them was a pass rusher. And now you pair him with the Grady Jarrett, a couple of the younger guys they have. They have two solid backers. You have the Simmons-Bates 1-2 safety punch. It makes a lot of sense for them. And it was a trade that developed pretty quickly. When I you know, broke the news, one of the things that a couple other teams asked me was, why would Atlanta give a 3 back? It should be a 4 or a 5. And the answer was, Atlanta is really going all in on this season. They already are paying Kirk Cousins real money. They obviously, we just mentioned the Simmons. They have a really good young corner in AJ Terrell. And then offensively, you're going to see an entirely different offense with Zach Robinson. I think he is going to be the unlock for Bijan Robinson, for Drake London, for Kyle Pitts. And obviously, his play-action system is very quarterback-friendly to a guy like Kirk Cousins. It's similar to what he ran in Minnesota. Kevin O'Connell, also from the Sean McVay tree. So a lot of moving parts, but I think ultimately New England, I don't want to say punting on the season, but clearly realizing they're not going to be a playoff team, and also understanding that now is the best time. If you can get a third rounder for a guy like Judon, it's the right move.
Yeah, Jordan, you limited my question about Atlanta. If they were in the AFC North, I don't know that I'd advise this course, but they're not. They're in the NFC South, an eminently winnable division. It seems like they're pushing the chips in, and they think they're going to be pretty good this year.
I think that division just became Atlanta's division to lose. I think they're, like, listen, to add Judon and Simmons in less than 24 hours, I don't think people realize that Simmons is coming off probably his second or third best year. He's 29, but Bates is the best safety in the league, okay? And then Simmons is a top five guy. So Atlanta is looking at the quarterbacks in that division. As someone in that front office told me, you add Judon, he's going to be able to get after Derek Carr. They think he can get after Bryce Young, and they believe that he'll be able to get after Baker Mayfield, because all these quarterbacks, and even Bryce, these are pocket guys. Little scramblers with a Baker, but these are by and large pocket quarterbacks. It's going to make a big difference. And then to your point, you know, having Cousins is just a huge upgrade. I mean, I thought Desmond Ridder was put in a really tough position, but Arthur Smith was never and should have never been a head coach, realistically. And I think his offense really held them back. So now you have the new OC, the new head coach, who's a master defensive game planner, schemer, Raheem Morris. And I think the culture inside that building has really changed as well. And then obviously there's the Michael Penix factor. You know, at some point in a year or 2 years, I don't know if it's this season, but he's going to be the guy. And I thought the idea that you can't get a pass rusher in free agency at the trade deadline is just not true. You know, the quarterback, to take a quarterback in the top 10 in Penix when you already invested a lot of capital in Cousins, to me, was the right move if you really believe genuinely that you're not going to be able to pick there again. And if you see now, they're able to get Judon, a top-tier pass rusher, in a trade. So I really like where Atlanta's going.
Follow Jordan Schultz on social at Schultz_report. Breaks a lot of NFL news. An NFL insider joining us here on Grant and Danny. Flip side, we started the show today talking just for a couple of minutes about the Patriots out of market because we watched them in the preseason last night.
Right.
Drake May made a couple of plays. I don't really understand their philosophy this year. This deal makes sense to me because to get a third as a rebuilding team, I love that. But it does seem like they're trying to have their cake and eat it too a little bit with Jacoby Brissett and maybe not starting Drake May. What do you envision for New England this season?
It's going to be, barring something unexpected, Brissett's going to be the one to start the year. And I think Drake May, like, I really like Drake May. And I think he has all the intangibles. I think he's got a really good arm. And I thought he played pretty well last night. You saw the rushing touchdown. He can move a pocket. He's young, though. He's really young. I think New England's looking at this like, this is year one with Gerard Mayo. He is a defensive mastermind. I mean, I've talked to a couple of guys already in that locker room, defensive players. And they're like, there's a reason why this guy was such a good defensive player. And there's a reason why he's a head coach, because you're combining the leadership with the football acumen and instincts. I think he's, in many ways, he's similar to Belichick, old school defensive guy, but he's a young, vibrant, you know, guy that can relate to the players in a way that Bill at this stage has won. Offensively, I'm interested to see what happens if Brissett struggles. Let's say they start 1-3, 1-4, and he's not playing well, and he's not upright. Does that mean that they go to May? They don't have a ton of weapons. I really like the Jalen Polk pick. I mean, he's going to be an instant contributor, as will Javon Baker out of UCF. Both those young receivers I really like. But this is not a team built to win in that division, because you're going to have to score points in that division. When we're talking about Aaron Rodgers, Tua, and Josh Allen. So I think New England is looking at this realistically, to your point. We can get a third-round pick for Matthew Judon, and I do think Brissett starts the majority of the year as a result.
Jordan, the Giants executed a trade within the division. It's not a huge deal. It's a 6th and 7th rounder for Jordan Phillips. But it got me to thinking about the Giants. Similar question to what Grant just asked about the Patriots. I kind of don't really know what they're going for this year and maybe even beyond. I think they're like 5-2-1 against Washington over the last several seasons and, you know, 30 games under 500 against everybody else. I'm kind of not sure what they think of themselves. I know what I think, but how are they viewing where they are right now?
So I was at their joint practice with Detroit last week, and one of the questions I had was, is this a rebuilding year? Is this a competitive year? Is this a playoff team? Like, what are you realistically believe you are? And they believe, and maybe the rest of the division doesn't, but they believe that they're going to be like a trendy up-and-coming team. What does that mean? That means that Daniel Jones is healthy. Andrew Thomas is healthy. They're all pro left tackle. And this Malik Nabers kid out of LSU is a dynamo. I mean, I think he's one of the best football players, young football players I've ever seen. And that's echoing what everyone's telling me from that building. Like, this guy is a superstar. I could see him having 100-plus catches, 1,400 yards, 8 touchdowns. I mean, he's going to get a target machine. And then they have this kid at Penn State they love, this rookie Theo Johnson. So I think they're banking on a lot of production from those guys. They're banking on the offensive line being better than it was last year. And then I think the difference is Brian Burns. I mean, he's a star. And obviously they gave up a ton of capital to get him, but they pay him. And I think that helps Kayvon Thibodeau. I think it helps the entire defensive line, which is really good. Obviously Lawrence is terrific. You mentioned the Hicks trade or the Phillips trade. When I put that out, and when I first got wind of it, I couldn't believe it, because it's so rare to see an NFC East or any interdivision trade. But that was simply, we signed him in the offseason. We were familiar with him from Buffalo, but we have a lot of really interesting young defensive linemen, and Dallas really needed a big body, and this is a conditional swap. That was more just fit and need and some of the young defensive tackles they have. But I think overall, yes, the Giants are probably more confident internally than their fans are.
Jordan Schultz, NFL insider on the Fan here in D.C. Brandon Ayuk's name has been bantied about for a few weeks.
You may have seen something on that.
Here in the district, we've been paying very close attention. Now, it seems like Washington, for whatever reason, is no longer interested. But they were one of the four teams in. They're one of the two teams it seemed like he wanted to play for. First of all, give us any information you have on the Commanders and the sweepstakes for Ayuk from the last few weeks. But then also, how's this going to end? Because it seems like we're in a holding pattern.
Okay, so a lot to unpack. I think he wanted to be a Commander first and foremost. I think he wanted to reunite with Jaden Daniels, who obviously he was with at Arizona State. And I think Washington to him was the number one team if it didn't work out in San Francisco. That being said, there was no scenario in which the Commanders were trading Terry McLaurin. And I think the Commanders really believe that they have something special right now with Cliff Kingsbury and Dan Quinn and Jaden Daniels. So that wasn't going to happen. Ayuk, for whatever reason, did not want to go to Cleveland, did not want to go to New England. New England was offering the most money, then Cleveland, and then Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh, I don't believe, is going to go ahead of T.J. Watt money, which means he's probably going to get 28 from them if that happens. The magic number is to get San Francisco to 28. If San Francisco comes to 28, then he's a Niner. To my understanding, that has not happened, which is why he still doesn't have the extension. I've said the last week since I reported that he had a sit-down with Kyle Shanahan and other members of the Niners organization that I believed he would be a Niner long-term. But you know, there's so many unknowns here. And I think the biggest issue is that you're 3 weeks or less away from the regular season, and this is still unresolved. And I'm saying this with great respect to everyone involved, but I think everyone involved is very ready for this to be resolved. That includes Pittsburgh. That includes the Niners. And I think Ayuk just wants to be paid the way that he deserves. And to me, he's a top seven, top eight receiver. He's coming off his best year. I talked to his personal coach last week. I said, where's he at right now, you know, mentally? And he said, this is a guy who does not blow smoke up anyone's butt. He said, this is the best he's been. This is the best shape he's been in. And he said something to him that was so interesting. He said, this is Ayuk talking. It's the first time in his NFL career where he can really watch from the sideline and see what other guys are not doing right, what they're leaving on the table, and that he's going to apply that this year. What does that mean for production-wise? I don't know. Where does that mean he ends up? I don't know. But I still believe in my heart of hearts the Niners are going to get there to 28 or somewhere around that magic number.
We'll ask you about the Jets and Jordan Schultz, NFL insider with us here on G&D. I think they're going to be good. And I know that's, you know, people aren't used to that. The Jets are always kind of a punchline. But last year they lost 4 one-score games and finished 7-10 with one of the worst quarterback situations in the world. If Aaron Rodgers is even, you know, late career Green Bay Aaron Rodgers, a.k.a. mediocre and fine by his standard, they could still be pretty nasty in a tough division, but they got this Hassan Reddick thing hanging over their head. How does that resolve itself, and give me your Jets outlook?
I agree with the Jets. I think defensively, they're going to be really tough. They were really good last year. And yep. Then, you know, they let Bryce Huff go and then obviously made the trade with Reddick. We'll get to that in a second. To your point about Aaron, I mean, if he's average, above average, I think this is a 9 or 10 win team. If he's really good, which I expect him to be, I think they can win 11 or 12 games. I think Garrett Wilson is one of the best young players in football. I think they clearly address the offensive line with Morgan Moses and Tyron Smith. And I think Breece Hall, I mean, this guy is a superstar. So they have a lot. There's a lot to like about that team. And, you know, I think the question marks are, can Robert Saleh win? I don't know if Robert Saleh can win, but I hope he can because the roster is there. And then to your point about Reddick, you know, there's so much to unpack with that situation. But the bottom line is, and I reported I reported some of this last week when I said that this guy is requesting a trade. Here's why, and here's what happened. Before he was traded from Philly to New York, the Jets offered him a deal. He turned it down. When the trade happened, so they went ahead and made the deal anyway. When the trade happened, they told him in good faith to show up to the press conference. We will find a number that best suits you. We will take care of you. They have not talked, fellas, since March 29th. Mm. So it's 5 months, over 5 months of no communication, no proposals, no emails, nothing. And so it got to the point where it was so contentious where Hassan saying, look, I'm not going to be here if I'm not going to get what I believe I'm worth. And, you know, I think it's important to consider the only players in the league to have four seasons in a row of 10-plus sacks are T.J. Watt, Myles Garrett, and Hassan Reddick. This is the guy who's an all-pro, and he needs to be paid. The Jets have not budged. My interpretation, he's already racked up, by the way, about $2.5 million in fines. So I think he's committed to this process. There's no scenario in my mind where he gets on the field week one without a restructured deal. I don't think an extension at this point is reasonable, but I do think it's possible that come week one or right around week one, before week one, that they can restructure it, put some incentives in there, and they can – hopefully move on amicably.
So maybe that's the answer, but that's where I was going to go to finish up, Jordan, is he really doesn't have any leverage to speak of. I mean, if he doesn't show up, he can't accrue the season. If they say they're not going to pay him, then they can continue to fine him. The new CBA makes it really, really hard. And the few guys that have ever really taken a stand, I mean, missing a season, not that he even has the ability to get to free agency anyway, but it can be career-altering and in some cases career-killing.
Yeah, I mean, the guys that have done it, that have really waited and played hardball, the ones that come to mind, Nick Bosa got $34 million. That's obviously, you know, that's a generational player. But he waited till right, you know, week one. Burrow waited, obviously. Zeke Elliott waited. He got a big deal. There are instances where it happens. But to your point, I mean, it's not a good scenario. He's a football player. He doesn't want to sit out. I mean, he knows how good the team can be. I think at some point, someone's going to blink, and I think it's going to be the Jets because I think the Jets know when they let Bryce Huff go, they knew they needed to add a pass rusher. They also traded John Franklin Myers, their other pass rusher, to get some cap room, and they know as well that next year, I mean, just think about who's eligible for an extension next year. Jermaine Johnson is a really good young pass rusher. They have Will McDonald coming up. They got Breece Hall. Soft Gardner, Garrett Wilson, all these guys are going to want their money. And so at some point, I do think the Jets are going to have to restructure. I think they need him on the field, and I think they know that even if they won't admit it.
Could just be talk. That statement they put out was about as powerful as I've seen.
It was.
Pretty firm, yeah.
Basically, Joe Douglas, I can read it real quick. He said, we have informed Hassan that we will not trade him, that he is expected to be here with his teammates, and that he will continue to be fined per the CBA if he does not report. I mean, I don't remember them, like a team that quickly going that hard after a trade demand.
Yeah, that was, you know, 20 minutes after. So they clearly weren't, you know, stunned by it.
Right.
I hear what you're saying, but the Jets are, what they're trying to do is create the most powerful united front possible to tell the player, we're not going to budge. But that doesn't mean that come week one, when he's still not there, that they're not going to say, okay, we can restructure, put some incentives in that won't affect our cap.
Jordan, great to catch up with you, man. Great info. Appreciate the time.
Enjoyed it. Thank you, guys. Take
Check him out. Schultz _ report on social. Does a great job covering the NFL with us here on Grant and Danny. NFL insider Jordan Schultz. Next on G&D, a little fill-in-the-blank NFL style. Darius is going to quiz us, and then we'll get back into the Commanders ahead of tomorrow night's preseason game as the hour continues on The Fan.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is not a drill, people. There is exhibition football. Tomorrow, the Commanders will be on the field. We've got a full breakdown for you coming up in about 15 minutes, but it is time right now to hop around the National Football League, also known on this radio program as the... It's time to fill in the blank, NFL style. Producer Darius at the moderation. It will... steer us in and out of topics. You and I got to answer the tough questions.
Indeed.
Let's do this thing.
All right. So Kansas City is going to play all their starters again this week. Probably perhaps as much as a full half of action, including the best player in the league, Patrick Mahomes, of course. Fill in the blank, guys. Andy Reid's decision to play his starters so much in the preseason is blank.
Sensible for them. I would recommend it for everybody else. But listen, you get made right an awful lot when you got Pat Mahomes. So whether this would be the smartest thing if they had Trevor Siemian or Zach Wilson, who knows? But you do it your way, and you've got a philosophy behind it. It's not just something they're doing slapdash. They've got a whole process behind it. So they're not getting the same work other teams are with those joint practices and some of the other things. So this is where they need to get their work in, and they're doing so.
Yeah, Andy Reid's decision to play his starters so much in the preseason is what more teams should do. Here's a weird concept. The best way to get better playing football in games is to play football in games.
Whoa, that's crazy.
It's what Dad did. It's what Uncle Scott did. It's what Grandma Nanny did. It's what I'm going to do. Do you risk injury? Sure. Do you have to be smart? Absolutely. But I think you be as safe as you can. You protect your guys as much as you can. I wouldn't go crazy with the veterans. I don't think I would play Patrick Mahomes a full half, certainly. I wouldn't play Travis Kelce for a half either. Those guys don't really need the games. But I would play a lot more of the percentage of my roster than most teams do, more snaps than they do. A guy like Jaden Daniels in this preseason game, for me, if this is his final preseason game, he would play a half of football. We're getting him as many reps to feel things out the first time in a game with low stakes that we can. Teams just don't see it that way anymore. But I love the way Andy Reid operates. And to say, is it a coincidence that the team that does it this way wins the most? Yeah, probably, because you've got Patrick Mahomes. But I also think it's a big part of their operation that they do things, they work hard, they prepare, and September matters to them. So I like that.
There are five first-time head coaches in the NFL this season. Mike McDonald of the Seahawks, Brian Callahan of the Titans, Antonio Pierce of the Raiders, Dave Canales of the Panthers, and Gerard Mayo of the Patriots. Fill in the blank here. Blank wins the most games this season of the five of those guys.
I don't love any of their chances to have a very good year. I think Dave Canales is in for a super long season.
Might be a tough one for Dave.
Gerard Mayo's not going to have a lot more success. I guess I'll go with Mike McDonald. And I'm not even that high on Seattle, but I think they could be an 8, maybe surprise everyone with 9-game type team. Let's say they win 8 games. The Raiders are in the 6 or 7 range. The Titans are in the 5 or 6 range. The Patriots and the Panthers are picking in the top 3. I'll go Mike McDonald, who Washington really liked, the former Ravens defensive coordinator, savant defensive mind from Michigan, who was on the Jim Harbaugh staff.
Give me Brian Callahan. He did sell 500,000 brake pads. People forget about that.
Tommy just sold 500,000 brake pads.
He did do that. So people acting like he has no resume. Look again. He sold 500,000 brake pads to Zielinski Auto.
Herbie Hancock.
I think people are sleeping on Tennessee. I think they've kind of revamped. It's sort of a new version, new day. The division is a little bit suspect. I don't think anybody's particularly good. Everyone's crowned Houston. I think they'll, you know, mess around, get to that 8-win plateau. I think Seattle takes a small step back as that division gets a little tougher.
Darius, Ryan's not here, so you're going to get a little something here. You normally avoid these like the plague. This is where Darius could get exposed a little bit, or he could come out on top.
Here we go.
What movie were we just referencing?
No idea.
This is tough.
Is it though?
No file.
Again, no file. Normally Ryan sits just smiling at us in that chair and he catches all the heat. Hey, what movie was that? Have you seen that movie? What movie was that? And Darius just sits there so quietly, coasting through. No Ryan today.
Uh-uh. Spotlight's on you.
That would be Tommy Boy.
I've never heard of that movie.
Sorry?
Never heard of
it. No, you have. No. You just haven't seen it.
Tommy Boy?
You've never heard of the movie Tommy Boy. I'm just going to keep saying Tommy Boy until you pretend that you've heard. Like, you've never heard of.
Are you familiar with Chris Farley?
Of course, yeah.
Okay. You're not familiar with Tommy Boy?
No.
Mm-mm. David Spade, Dan Aykroyd?
Guy.
Nothing. Damn, that's a good cast right there, actually.
Yeah.
I'm going to need you to watch Tommy Boy. You don't want, when I do my little Tommy likey, Tommy want wingy thing, that means nothing to you?
No, I always thought it was a funny bit that you did, but I just never knew where it came from.
I could get a look at a T-bone.
Not so much here or here. More this right region here. Nothing. None of this.
Wow, these are bits that you guys do all the time, and I just never knew where they came from.
Housekeeping.
Even on our trip to Florida, I sang, and Darius laughed. Fat guy in a little coat.
Because I've heard that before.
Of course you have.
Oh, boy. This is tough for all of us. It's all tough. Right, we'll let you get back to your job.
Richard!
All right. Nope, no foul. There are 12 teams that have never won a Super Bowl in NFL history. Here are the teams. The Cardinals, the Falcons, the Bills, the Panthers, the Bengals, the Chargers, the Vikings, the Titans, the Browns, the Detroit Lions, the Houston Texans, and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Fill in the blank. Blank has the best chance to end its drought in 2024.
The Detroit Lions. As much as it begrudges me to say, as much as it pains me to say.
Coming around on old Motor City Dan Campbell.
I think Dan Campbell is a boob, but they don't play. I'm not going to stop hammering the stat. I cannot believe this. A team that is built to play indoors with the speed and the physicality, like Jared Goff inside, good. Anywhere else, terrible. They don't play outside until November, and they only play 3 games outdoors all year. They have a great chance of getting home field advantage. The AFC is way deeper than the NFC. I think the NFC East is going to fall apart. You probably have to beat one team from there. It's basically you and San Francisco, and you had them dead to rights last year in the NFC title game. Detroit has the best shot to break that streak.
I'll go Bengals, who have been in a Super Bowl, who have played in a couple of AFC championship games prior to the Burrow injury. This past year, it felt like they could get there any and every season. Tough division, no doubt about it. You got to deal with Baltimore, top of the AFC North. Cleveland is not fun to play. Another team on this list that's never won a Super Bowl, by the way. But Joe Burrow is a top 3 quarterback. And I think that's kind of where it begins for me. Do you have an elite QB? Joe Cool's a guy in the playoffs that's going to give you a chance every single weekend. So I'll go with the Bengals narrowly over the Lions. Be different, but I certainly think those are the top 2 teams out of the 12.
One of my buddies is listening, and he heard that I hadn't seen Tommy Boy, so he's texting me and giving me a bunch of flack right now. So thanks, guys.
He's giving you some Eric.
But also thanks for listening, which is great.
Which we appreciate.
Unlike Darius's father, he listens to FM radio, which we appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I got another list of teams for you. This list is teams that were last place in their division last season. Cincinnati, Tennessee, Carolina, New England, Washington, Chicago, the Chargers, and the Cardinals. Of those teams that were last place a year ago, fill in the blank, blank has the best chance to win its division.
It's Cincinnati. Grant already touched on why. Again, that division is a buzzsaw. Everybody is good. Cleveland, obviously, with the quarterback situation. Pittsburgh, as bad as they were last year, was 10-7. That's kind of what Mike Tomlin does, making chicken salad out of lesser ingredients. But Cincinnati, on paper, good defense, weapons everywhere. If Joe Burrow is healthy, that's a group that could absolutely be an 11-12 win team.
I'll set the Bengals to this side because you just set them in. I think it's too easy. But I wonder who you go with next, because you can kind of think about it by division, like you did with the Titans earlier.
Yeah.
There's nobody really standing in your way. I mean, the Texans could be great.
They're the best team on paper.
We're not sure. They've been crowned, but how good are they going to be with a bullseye on their back? The Panthers could be horrendous, and I think they probably will be. But if you believe in Canales as a whisperer, you think Bryce Young bounces back, that division is as open as any. Atlanta, Tampa Bay have chances to win, but is there an 11-win team in that division? Probably not. I'm going to settle on Chicago, actually. I think the Bears are going to be pretty good. I think that's a 10-win team. Detroit should finish better than them. But what happens if Goff goes down for a month? What happens if you don't have Amon Ross St. Brown or something like that for five or six games? I think Chicago is within a game or two of Detroit. Something quirky happens. They could win the North in the NFC. Caleb Williams looks like he's the real deal so far. All systems go there. They have the best trio of wide receivers in the league. I think they'll move the ball. They'll score points. I like their running back room. And they have a top 10 defense with a defensive-minded head coach who did an exceptional job calling plays defensively when he took over the role last year in Matt Eberflus. So I'm high on the Bears at this point. And there you go. That is Filling in the Blank, NFL edition. It's time for a Commanders stock report ahead of preseason game two. We'll get that for you next right here on Grant and Danny. Sometimes dreams come true. Party till we die on the Grant and Danny radio program. I don't think of myself as an EDM guy or like one of these dudes who stands in front of a DJ and just like puts his hand in the air.
I do. I think of you as a guy with like a plastic cup filled with like a clear cocktail, holding up a lighter or a cell phone at an EDM show, just rolling.
They play this at Nats Park before the ninth inning when they're trying to rally. It's one of my favorite jams.
So you hear it a lot.
Oh, I love it so much. If the Junkies played Hit or Hurting, it's a smash hit. But I always think of, like, Blair it a little bit. Like, the ballpark's hopping, and then James Woods, like, on deck, and he just looks like he just woke up from a nap and is, like, so emotionless. He's got the ball, the bat resting on his back shoulder. I'm, like, hopping around in the stands, and James Woods, like, oh, maybe we'll have an at-bat here. Let's see.
Maybe I'll hit a tracer. Who is this?
I don't know.
He wants to party till he's dead, I'll tell you that.
Party till we die, it's called.
It's fire. M-A-K-J, I think. It's all capitalized. I'm assuming it's you got to say each letter.
Here. I'm sure.
There you go.
Yeah.
And Timmy Trumpet. Timmy Trumpet is the guy that does the song that Edwin Diaz comes out to.
Wait a minute. So Timmy Trumpet's involved here too?
Yeah.
It's got a little Timmy Trumpet vibe to it. It's not surprising to me.
Huh.
Anyway, it is time for your Commanders Spotlight right now on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Danny, first player you want to go spotlighting for tomorrow night.
Low-hanging fruit, but we've been talking about it a lot. Jahan Dotson, what do you want to do, man? What do you want? What do you want this to be? You want to be another cautionary tale? You want to be another Josh Doctson? Or do you want to be the guy that took this challenge on and emerged as a bona fide number two receiver? It's not your fault you got drafted in the first round. You worked hard, tried to fulfill your dream. But, bro, at some point, you got to step up and start producing. And it's not trending in the right direction for you at the moment.
Spotlight Jaden Daniels, another strong practice in front of the media. Miami media members blown away by the joint session he had. Now you get to go out and play the Dolphins. They won't be mixing a whole lot of coverages. They're not going to be showing a ton, I don't think, in their secondary. Nice little chance to put a couple of more birdies in the hole. Let's continue to string together positive headlines, momentum, going into the start of the season.
Spot that left tackle position. Coleman Lucas, the law firm they're in. Let's figure it out. Who we got? Who's the dude? We don't know what we're going to see or if Brandon Coleman is playing. At least I haven't seen an update on that front. But I want some certainty there. I want some comfort there. I want to see what this regime, this front office, this coaching staff, what they saw, let themselves feel. No, we don't have to do anything at the left tackle spot. We got it under control. I'd like to see that.
Spotlight rookie DB Mikey Sanristil. He will be your starting nickelback. He, too, had a couple of big moments in the practice yesterday against the Dolphins, reportedly. He's been excellent at camp. I really liked him and noticed him right away when I was out at practices. And then you saw him flying around. I mean, just a physical guy. There was a play. There was only one play I really noticed him in his limited time on the field in preseason game one. But he came across the formation just unnecessarily, like as a tackle's being made, just complete full extension, Superman dive into the pile. The dude, just a football player. Scott McLuhan style.
Football player.
At the same position. We referenced Jahan Dotson a moment ago. Dalmy Brown. As the great Herb Brooks once said, great moments are born from great opportunity. You didn't really have an opportunity before, because once you were buried, rightfully so, there was no reason to pass over some other guys to have you get reps and get looks. When all of a sudden you're in the mix, whether you deserve to be or not, I don't know, but you are. Looks like you've fallen into some favor with this regime. You got a chance to go out and showcase and maybe another deep catch, maybe a little bit more down the field, show something in the toolkit. People might be more excited about old number two.
Spotlight roster bubble, Cole Turner. Cole Turner was drafted by the Marty Party and Ron Rivera. That doesn't get you a whole lot around these parts these days. But he was a fifth-round pick, 149 overall, out of Nevada.
Nevada.
I was looking for Nevada.
What is Nevada?
24 years old, he's huge, 6'6", 240 pounds, big catch radius, second year. One of the practices I was at, he went up the ladder, made a great catch in the middle of the field. When he got the ball thrown to him in games last season, it was very, very rare. He normally made an athletic play, like made a catch or did something even in the preseason where you thought, this guy's got some game. I think right now he's pretty squarely listed as fourth on the tight end depth chart. Do they keep four? Ertz, Sharpie. Bates, Sharpie. Sinnott, Sharpie. If you keep a fourth, Cole Turner's got a shot. He could force your hand. Maybe he's not competing against, say, Bates or Sinnott, because those guys, as a blocker and as a dual-threat draft pick, respectively, are going to be on the team. But maybe he's competing against, say, like Jeremy McNichols as a fourth running back or Michael Wiley or something like that. Maybe he's competing against the 10th offensive lineman they might keep. Cole Turner, have a big game. Have a big couple of games here in the next 10 days. Maybe you make this roster.
Newly rebuilt interior of the offensive line. Center Tyler Biadasz, left guard Nick Gallegretti. Thought they showed well in the series that they were in that first game. Moving the pile a little bit. Running lanes were there, I thought. Demonstrated good physicality. This is where this team, this org, said, we need to upgrade immediately. Early signings, big money, Biadasz and Allegretti, respectively. That newly formed offensive line going to be key to keep old Jaden Daniels upright.
Spotlight, Jamin Davis, 25-year-old, now defensive end. Used to be an off-ball linebacker. That's changed. 6'3", 234-pound, number 19 overall pick in 2021, 3 years later, fighting for a job. He made a couple of nice plays on his first two snaps, if memory serves. Just holding up against the run, made tackles for 1 and 2 yard gains. Otherwise, though, he wasn't overly noticeable. And when you did, it was a busted run around the edge where he didn't keep contained, still learning the position. I'd love to see him win on a passing down.
Yeah.
Love to see him put on a move as a defensive end. We saw him have some success rushing the quarterback as a linebacker on the second level coming downhill. But now, at that position on the edge, going up against a tackle, a lot of times it's stalemate, you're kind of running into a guy and getting locked up with the long-armed offensive lineman. Let's see him win. Put a spin on someone. Put him in the washing machine. You get around him. Club, rip, something. Let's see that you've diversified the portfolio a little bit.
Manuel Forbes, pretty easy. Again, first-round pick last year. Not your fault. You shouldn't have been, but you were. And here we are. The struggles are well-documented. I thought there was some good in this first week. There was some bad as well. But got a great test this week, or tomorrow, rather, in Miami. Would love to see him show well.
Spotlight, Washington Commanders, Miami Dolphins, preseason game number 2, tomorrow night. Of course, you can watch the game locally. Our own Brian Mitchell's going to be in the booth on the color commentary with Chick Hernandez on Channel 9. So looking forward to seeing B-Mitch on the call tomorrow. Game is slated to kick off at 8 p.m. And then the very strange 7 p.m. rather tomorrow, I beg your pardon. The very strange 8 p.m. Sunday kickoff next week.
Weird.
Against the Patriots at home at the X. We'll get you ready for baseball next on The Fan. He's Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Final few minutes, taking you up to about 6:10. Charlie and Dave pregame at that time. Nats, Phillies tonight at 6:45, game 2 of 4. The Nationals got slapped around by Philadelphia last evening. The exclusive sponsor of this show is the law firm Condorian Murad. They can guide you and your family in the right direction, helping you to draft a will or set up a revocable trust. They can also create a healthcare power of attorney if needed. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. My parents did that and got taken care of very well. They had a great experience. Be sure to tell them, like my parents did, that the Grant and Danny program sent you, and you will get a discount. KMLawyers.com. That is KMLawyers.com. Danny, we asked this question earlier in the show briefly. We'll come back to it next week and maybe do it in more detail and really drill down. Who do you think ends up second on this team in targets at wide receiver?
I think it's Zacchaeus. I think the way the targets are going to go is obviously McLaurin is one so far away. That's sort of beyond discussion. I think second is Eckler. I think third will be that tight end spot kind of combined with Ertz early, maybe Sinnott more as the season goes. Then I think
if Ertz is healthy, I think it'll be Ertz all the way. Yeah. But I just can't see him playing 16, 15 games.
I don't either. But, you know, hopefully. I mean, hopefully there's still more to him than I can't remember who called him this, a catch and fall guy. You hope that there's a little bit more dynamic there as a safety valve. Then I think your fourth place in targets will be Olamide Zaccheaus. Is, you know, people will look at it as, is he a number two? I think the role is going to be, you know, slot receiver is his position. But the way I think about one, two, three, whatever, is target share. Is it's third and four, where are we going? Or, you know, who are we designing looks for? I think you might end up with the fourth most looks overall, second for receivers.
As we close in on a preseason tilt against Miami, it's time to look into our player to lock in on, presented by Baldino's Lock and Key, your one-stop shop for auto keys and fobs. Visit baldinos.com. As we now take the next step in this roster crunch, who are you locking in on?
Ooh, that is a good one. Again, it's hard to avoid it, but it's got to be Jahan Dotson. I mean, this is somebody that we thought last year, you and I did, was going to lead the team in catches. Maybe second in yards, McLaurin a bit more dynamic in terms of getting down the football field, but we thought he'd have 80-some catches last year. Gravely disappointed. There's a million reasons why he's now kind of sliding down and is in a position battle at this point, right? I mean, that's where we are, so he needs a good showing.
Bryson Tremaine, the big 6'4" wide receiver, was on the show last week when you were out. Had a good conversation with him. I've been immensely impressed by him in practice. They brought in Martavis Bryant. They clearly are looking for and want some size in that receiver room. There's a sixth spot up for grabs, at least. If they keep seven, there's two spots probably there to be had. Bryson Tremaine, who was on the practice squad last year, made a big catch in preseason game one, is a gem away. You know, he is a four-catch, 42-yard half away from really putting his name squarely into the mix for the last roster spot at wide receiver. So that's a guy that I would call some attention to in that regard. But I think the competition at the back of the wide receiver depth chart is really, really good. Something we didn't get to today, last couple of days, that I know you've been chewing on and wanting to talk about, was that Ted Leonsis responded to Kevin Sheehan and Tom Lavero when they were having a discussion on a podcast about the Olympics being in D.C., I'm a big proponent, like I think everybody should be, because when you have the Olympics, the amount of problems that get fixed, the amount of things that don't work and aren't efficient, they have to be solved. Stadium stuff that improves is pretty extensive, but obviously a ton of money goes into it as well. And I know you had thoughts on Leonsis, who is very candid in kind of responding, which he normally doesn't do, directly to media analysis.
Yeah, I thought it was, first of all, good for him. And I mean that. I'm not just saying that sarcastically. I mean that. Good for him for, you know, responding directly and sharing thoughts. It's good to have owners that are accessible, not meaning you can go up and talk to them every day, but that are willing to engage in these matters of public discourse. And this is sort of bigger than any one team or sport or
basically,
otherwise.
It was like a really long, like, word, yeah. Basically a full Microsoft Word page comment on what he listened to.
On the discussion. So a number of things, though. This is now I put my cynical hat on here after giving him a compliment. He's basically saying, we need somebody who's young, fresh, innovative to step up and take care of these kinds of projects and lead us into this. What he's saying is, by translation, we need someone who's willing to spend a boatload of money to do all the things that'll satisfy the International Olympic Committee to build up all the stuff, the infrastructure that has to happen. In theory, the way people always sell this, talking about the Olympics, is we'll fix all of these things, and by virtue of the 2 weeks that we house the world, and basically all the athletes and everything that comes with it in terms of media and families and everyone extended, will then have something that solved all of the problems. And in theory, that sounds great. What happens a lot of time is stuff gets pushed to the side or sort of swept in a certain way. And, you know, it's kind of temporary situations. I mean, again, this is older, but I visited Barcelona a decade after they had their Olympic Games. And there's an empty stadium, whole rows of, kind of now that are worn down, dilapidated things that were supposed to be housing for everybody. Ended up not being housing for anybody. And it's just this whole suburb and slum that doesn't exist. And it's basically vacant housing.
I'd say Atlanta benefited pretty immensely.
Some cities have. I mean, there's always this push and pull, and economists will agree or disagree about the outlied spending. But he's basically saying in this piece, A, he wants it, which I actually happen to also. But B, we need someone that's willing to sort of lead us into the breach, and a couple of things have to happen. But it's an interesting discussion about if folks would want the Olympics here.
I don't pretend to be smart enough to have all the answers on how to do it or where the money comes from. But if the answer is, hey, Grant, sports fan who loves the Summer Olympics and is from D.C., would it be one of the crown jewel moments of your lifetime to have the globe turn their attention to your backyard for a sporting 2 weeks? I mean, that would just be unbelievable. In addition to the fact that some of the things that don't currently work and aren't helpful would get fixed. Now, there's way more complicated things behind the scenes that have to happen, and I understand that. But I still have hope that inevitably and eventually it does go down. But the difference between L.A. and the ability to hold this event versus D.C. is a pretty massive canyon, I would say. And I can't wait for 4 years from now. I mean, I did not go to Paris. I probably will. I have a hard time believing I wouldn't be in L.A. for some part of the event coming up in 4 years. Let's get you ready for Nationals baseball tonight. We'll give you your starting lineups and pitching matchups presented by The Window Man. Since 1989, The Window Man has been the educational window company. Get your free, no-pressure, in-home estimate at thewindowman.com or at their Fairfax showroom.
Behind Patrick Corbin is looking to keep that ERA under 6. Currently sits at 5.98.
Here we go, Patrick.
Here we
you
go, Patrick.
Got this.
Let's say, baby.
Come on now.
Leading off and playing right field, Alex Call. Batting second, playing shortstop. See? Check. Abram is batting second in left field. The James Wood. Your cleanup hitter and DH, Andres Chaparro. Batting fifth, doing the catching, K-Bear Ruiz. Batting sixth, playing second base, Luis Garcia. And at first base, hitting seventh, Juan Yepez. Batting eighth and playing third base, Jose Tenya. Batting ninth, your guy, my guy, our guy, Jacob Young.
Last three starts for Patrick Corbin. He's only given up 18 runs in 13 innings.
Okay.
Only 18. So he's been fine.
Yeah.
I would say. Obviously, I kid. 13 hits, 10 runs in the three innings against Arizona.
That's tough, yeah.
Six decent innings against San Francisco, and then he got hit around eight hits, three walks, four earnies, and four walks against the Angels. But as you said, 5.98 ERA. That's the game we're playing with Patrick Corbin the rest of the way. Will that ERA finish under 6? Nats weather presented by Pepco. Storm season's here, and they know a little prep makes a big difference. Get storm informed at pepco.com/storm prep. No Ryan Means, show meteorologist Darris Dameron.
At Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia, it's warm. It's 87 degrees here at first, close to first pitch, partly sunny. There will be some cloud cover. Should dip into the high 70s by the end of the game. Stay cool out there in Philadelphia.
Thank you guys for listening to this radio program today and all week long. It means a lot to us. And also, if you don't, then we don't get to keep doing it.
That's right.
And then we have to get real jobs.
I don't want that.
Nobody wants to have a have-to job.
You want me as your coworker?
We like the get-to job. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's our favorite thing. But seriously, thank you guys for listening. Till tomorrow, Vargas.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sometimes dreams come true. Party till we die on the Grant and Danny radio program. I don't think of myself as an EDM guy or like one of these dudes who stands in front of a DJ and just like puts his hand in the air.
I do. I think of you as a guy with like a plastic cup filled with like a clear cocktail, holding up a lighter or a cell phone at an EDM show, just rolling.
They play this at Nats Park before the ninth inning when they're trying to rally. It's one of my favorite jams.
So you hear it a lot.
Oh, I love it so much. If the Junkies played Hit or Hurting, it's a smash hit. But I always think of like Blair it a little bit. Like the ballpark's hopping, and then James Woods like on deck, and he just looks like he just woke up from a nap, and is like so emotionless. He's got the ball, the bat resting on his back shoulder. I'm like hopping around in the stands, and James Woods like, oh, maybe we'll have an at bat here. Let's see.
Maybe I'll hit a tracer. Who is this?
I don't know.
He wants to party till he's dead. I'll tell you that.
Party till we die. It's called.
It's fire. M-A-K-J, I think. It's all capitalized. I'm assuming it's you gotta say each letter.
Here. It's I'm sure.
There you go. Timmy Trumpet. Timmy Trumpet is the guy that does the song that Edwin Diaz comes out to.
Wait a minute. So Timmy Trumpet's involved here too?
Yeah.
It's got a little Timmy Trumpet vibe to it. It's not surprising to me.
Huh.
Anyway, it is time for your Commander's spotlight right now on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Danny, first player you want to go spotlighting for tomorrow night.
Low-hanging fruit, but we've been talking about it a lot. Jahan Dotson, what do you want to do, man? What do you want? What do you want this to be? You want to be another cautionary tale? You want to be another Josh Doctson? Or do you want to be the guy that took this challenge on and emerged as a bona fide number two receiver? It's not your fault you got drafted in the first round. You worked hard, tried to fulfill your dream. But, bro, at some point, you got to step up and start producing. And it's not trending in the right direction for you at the moment.
Spotlight Jaden Daniels. Another strong practice in front of the media. Miami media members blown away by the joint session he had. Now you get to go out and play the Dolphins. They won't be mixing a whole lot of coverages. They're not going to be showing a ton, I don't think, in their secondary. Nice little chance to put a couple of more birdies in the hole. Let's continue to string together positive headlines, momentum going into the start of the season.
Spot that left tackle position. Coleman Lucas, the law firm they're in. Let's figure it out. Who we got? Who's the dude? We don't know what we're going to see or if Brandon Coleman is playing. At least I haven't seen an update on that front. But I want some certainty there. I want some comfort there. I want to see what this regime, this front office, this coaching staff, what they saw to let themselves feel. No, we don't have to do anything at the left tackle spot. We got it under control. I'd like to see that.
Spotlight rookie DB Mikey Sanristil. He will be your starting nickelback. He, too, had a couple of big moments in the practice yesterday against the Dolphins, reportedly. He's been excellent at camp. I really liked him and noticed him right away when I was out at practices. And then you saw him flying around. I mean, just a physical guy. There was a play. There was only one play I really noticed him in his limited time on the field in preseason game one. But he came across the formation just unnecessarily, like as a tackle's being made, just complete full extension Superman dive into the pile. The dude, just a football player. Scott McLuhan style.
Football player. At the same position. We referenced Jahan Dotson a moment ago. Dalmy Brown. As the great Herb Brooks once said, great moments are born from great opportunity. You didn't really have an opportunity before. Because once you were buried, rightfully so, there was no reason to pass over some other guys to have you get reps and get looks. When all of a sudden you're in the mix, whether you deserve to be or not, I don't know, but you are. Looks like that you've fallen into some favor with this regime. You got a chance. You go out and showcase and maybe another deep catch, maybe a little bit more down the field. Show something in the toolkit. People might be more excited about old number two.
Spotlight roster bubble Cole Turner. Cole Turner was drafted by the Marty Party and Ron Rivera. That doesn't get you a whole lot around these parts these days. But he was a fifth-round pick, 149 overall, out of Nevada.
Nevada.
I was looking for Nevada.
What is Nevada?
24 years old, he's huge, 6'6", 240 pounds, big catch radius, second year. One of the practices I was at, he went up the ladder, made a great catch in the middle of the field. When he got the ball thrown to him in games last season, it was very, very rare. He normally made an athletic play, like made a catch or did something even in the preseason where you thought, this guy's got some game. I think right now he's pretty squarely listed as fourth on the tight end depth chart. Do they keep four? Ertz, Sharpie. Bates, Sharpie. Sinnott, Sharpie. If you keep a fourth, Cole Turner's got a shot. He could force your hand. Maybe he's not competing against, say, Bates or Sinnott, because those guys, as a blocker and as a dual-threat draft pick, respectively, are going to be on the team. But maybe he's competing against, say, like Jeremy McNichols as a fourth running back, or Michael Wiley or something like that. Maybe he's competing against the 10th offensive lineman they might keep. Cole Turner, have a big game, have a big couple of games here in the next 10 days. Maybe you make this roster.
Newly rebuilt interior of the offensive line. Center Tyler Biadasz, left guard Nick Allegretti. Thought they showed well in the series that they were in that first game. Moving the pile a little bit. Running lanes were there, I thought. Demonstrated good physicality. This is where this team, this org, said, we need to upgrade immediately. Early signings, big money, Biadasz and Allegretti, respectively. That newly formed offensive line going to be key to keep old Jaden Daniels upright.
Spotlight, Jamin Davis, 25-year-old, now defensive end. Used to be an off-ball linebacker. That's changed. 6'3", 234-pound, number 19 overall pick in 2021, 3 years later, fighting for a job. He made a couple of nice plays on his first two snaps, if memory serves. Just holding up against the run, made tackles for 1 and 2 yard gains. Otherwise, though, he wasn't overly noticeable, and when you did, it was a busted run around the edge where he didn't keep contained, still learning the position. I'd love to see him win on a passing down.
Yeah.
Love to see him put on a move as a defensive end. We saw him have some success rushing the quarterback as a linebacker on the second level coming downhill, but now at that position on the edge, going up against a tackle, a lot of times it's stalemate. You're kind of running into a guy and getting locked up with the long-armed offensive lineman. Let's see him win. Put a spin on someone. Put him in the washing machine. You can get around him. Club, rip, something. Let's see that you've diversified the portfolio a little bit.
Nathaniel Forbes, pretty easy. Again, first-round pick last year. Not your fault. You shouldn't have been, but you were, and here we are. The struggles are well-documented. I thought there was some good in this first week. There was some bad as well, but got a great test this week, or tomorrow, rather, in Miami. Would love to see him show well.
Spotlight. Washington Commanders, Miami Dolphins, preseason game number 2, tomorrow night. Of course, you can watch the game locally. Our own Brian Mitchell's going to be in the booth on the color commentary with Chick Hernandez on Channel 9. So looking forward to seeing B-Mitch on the call tomorrow. Game is slated to kick off at 8 p.m. And then the very strange, 7 p.m. rather tomorrow, I beg your pardon, the very strange 8 p.m. Sunday kickoff next week.
Weird.
Against the Patriots at home at the X. We'll get you ready for baseball next on The Fan. He's Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Final few minutes, taking you up to about 6:10. Charlie and Dave pregame at that time. Nats, Phillies tonight at 6:45, game 2 of 4. The Nationals got slapped around by Philadelphia last evening. The exclusive sponsor of this show is the law firm Condorian Murad. They can guide you and your family in the right direction, helping you to draft a will or set up a revocable trust. They can also create a healthcare power of attorney if needed. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. My parents did that and got taken care of very well. They had a great experience. Be sure to tell them, like my parents did, that the Grant and Danny program sent you, and you will get a discount. kmlawyers.com. That is kmlawyers.com. Danny, we asked this question earlier in the show briefly. We'll come back to it next week and maybe do it in more detail and really drill down. Who do you think ends up second on this team in targets at wide receiver?
I think it's Zacchaeus. I think the way the targets are going to go is, obviously, McLaurin is one so far away. That's sort of a beyond discussion. I think second is Eckler. I think third will be that tight end spot kind of combined with Ertz early, maybe Sinnott more as the season goes. Then I think
if Ertz is healthy, I think it'll be Ertz all the way.
Yeah.
But I just can't see him playing 16, 15 games.
I don't either. But, you know, hopefully there's still more to him than I can't remember who called him this, a catch and fall guy. You hope that there's a little bit more dynamic there as a safety valve. Then I think your fourth place in targets will be Olamide Zaccheaus. People will look at it as, is he a number two? I think the role is going to be, slot receiver is his position. But the way I think about it, one, two, three, whatever, is target share, is it's third and four, where are we going? Or, who are we designing looks for? I think he might end up with the fourth most looks overall, second for receivers.
As we close in on a preseason tilt against Miami, it's time to look into our player to lock in on, presented by Baldino's Lock and Key, your one-stop shop for auto keys and fobs. Visit baldinos.com. As we now take the next step in this roster crunch, who are you locking in on?
Ooh, that is a good one. Again, it's hard to avoid it, but it's got to be Jahan Dotson. I mean, this is somebody that we thought last year, you and I did, was gonna lead the team in catches. Maybe second in yards, McLaurin a bit more dynamic in terms of getting down the football field, but we thought he'd have 80-some catches last year. Gravely disappointed. There's a million reasons why he's now kind of sliding down and is in a position battle at this point, right? I mean, that's where we are, so he needs a good showing.
Bryson Tremaine, the big 6'4" wide receiver, was on the show last week when you were out. Had a good conversation with him. I've been immensely impressed by him in practice. They brought in Martavis Bryant. They clearly are looking for and want some size in that receiver room. There's a sixth spot up for grabs, at least. If they keep seven, there's two spots probably there to be had. Bryson Tremaine, who was on the practice squad last year, made a big catch in preseason game one, is a gem away. You know, he is a four-catch, 42-yard half away from really putting his name squarely into the mix for the last roster spot at wide receiver. So that's a guy that I would call some attention to in that regard. But I think the competition at the back of the wide receiver depth chart is really, really good. Something we didn't get to today, last couple days, that I know you've been chewing on and wanting to talk about, was that Ted Leonsis responded to Kevin Sheehan and Tom Lavero when they were having a discussion on a podcast about the Olympics being in D.C. I'm a big proponent, like I think everybody should be, because when you have the Olympics, the amount of problems that get fixed, the amount of things that don't work and aren't efficient, they have to be solved. Stadium stuff that improves is pretty extensive, but obviously a ton of money goes into it as well. And I know you had thoughts on Leonsis, who is very candid in kind of responding, which he normally doesn't do, directly to media analysis.
Yeah, I thought it was, first of all, good for him. And I mean that. I'm not just saying that sarcastically. I mean that. Good for him for, you know, responding directly and sharing thoughts. It's good to have owners that are accessible, not meaning you can go up and talk to them every day, but that are willing to engage in these matters of public discourse. And this is sort of bigger than any one team or sport or
basically,
otherwise.
It was like a really long, like, word, yeah, basically a full Microsoft Word page comment on what he listened to.
On the discussion. So a number of things, though. This is now I put my cynical hat on here after giving him a compliment. He's basically saying, we need somebody who's young, fresh, innovative to step up and take care of these kinds of projects and lead us into this. What he's saying is, by translation, we need someone who's willing to spend a boatload of money to do all the things that'll satisfy the International Olympic Committee to build up all the stuff, the infrastructure that has to happen. In theory, the way people always sell this, talking about the Olympics, is we'll fix all of these things, and by virtue of the 2 weeks that we house the world and basically all the athletes and everything that comes with it in terms of media and families and everyone extended, we'll then have something that solved all of the problems. And in theory, that sounds great. What happens a lot of time is stuff gets pushed to the side or sort of swept in a certain way. And, you know, it's kind of temporary situations. I mean, again, this is older, but I visited Barcelona a decade after they had their Olympic Games. And there's an empty stadium, whole rows of, you know, kind of now that are worn down, dilapidated things that were supposed to be housing for everybody ended up not being housing for anybody. And it's just this whole suburb and slum that doesn't exist. And it's basically vacant housing.
I'd say Atlanta benefited pretty immensely.
Some cities have. I mean, there's always this push and pull, and an economist will agree or disagree about the outlied spending. But he's basically saying in this piece, A, he wants it, which I actually happen to also. But B, we need someone that's willing to sort of lead us into the breach, and a couple of things have to happen. But it's an interesting discussion about if folks would want the Olympics here.
I don't pretend to be smart enough to have all the answers on how to do it or where the money comes from. But if the answer is, hey, Grant, sports fan who loves the Summer Olympics and is from D.C., would it be one of the crown jewel moments of your lifetime to have the globe turn their attention to your backyard for a sporting 2 weeks? I mean, that would just be unbelievable. In addition to the fact that some of the things that don't currently work and aren't helpful would get fixed. Now, there's way more complicated things behind the scenes that have to happen, and I understand that. But I still have hope that inevitably and eventually it does go down. But the difference between L.A. and the ability to hold this event versus D.C. is a pretty massive canyon, I would say. And I can't wait for 4 years from now. I mean, I did not go to Paris. I probably will. I have a hard time believing I wouldn't be in L.A. for some part of the event coming up in 4 years. Let's get you ready for Nationals baseball tonight. We'll give you your starting lineups and pitching matchups presented by The Window Man. Since 1989, The Window Man has been the educational window company. Get your free, no-pressure, in-home estimate at thewindowman.com. We're at their Fairfax showroom.
Behind Patrick Corbin is looking to keep that ERA under 6. Currently sits at 5.98.
Here we go, Patrick.
Here we
you
go, Patrick.
This.
What I say, baby?
Come on now.
Leading off and playing right field, Alex Call. Batting second, playing shortstop. See? Check. Abram is batting second in left field. The James Wood, your cleanup hitter and DH, Andres Chaparro, batting fifth, doing the catching, K-Bear Ruiz, batting sixth, playing second base, Luis Garcia, and at first base, hitting seventh, Juan Yepez, batting eighth and playing third base, Jose Tenya, batting ninth, your guy, my guy, our guy, Jacob Young.
Last three starts for Patrick Corbin, he's only given up 18 runs in 13 innings.
Okay.
Only 18. So he's been fine.
Yeah.
I would say. Obviously, I kid, 13 hits, 10 runs in the three innings against Arizona.
That's tough, yeah.
Six decent innings against San Francisco, and then he got hit around eight hits, three walks, four earnings, and four walks against the Angels. But as you said, 5.98 ERA. That's the game we're playing with Patrick Corbin the rest of the way. Will that ERA finish under six? Nats weather presented by Pepco. Storm season's here, and they know a little prep makes a big difference. Get storm informed at pepco.com/stormprep. No Ryan Means, show meteorologist Darris Dameron.
At Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia, it's warm. It's 87 degrees here at first, close to first pitch, partly sunny. There will be some cloud cover. Should dip into the high 70s by the end of the game. Stay cool out there in Philadelphia.
Thank you guys for listening to this radio program today and all week long. It means a lot to us. And also, if you don't, then we don't get to keep doing it.
That's right.
And then we have to get real jobs.
I don't want that.
Nobody wants to have a have-to job.
You want me as your coworker?
We like the get-to job. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's our favorite thing. But seriously, thank you guys for listening. Till tomorrow, Vargas.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
He's Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Final few minutes, taking you up to about 6:10. Charlie and Dave pregame at that time. Nats, Phillies tonight. At 6:45, game 2 of 4, the Nationals got slapped around by Philadelphia last evening. The exclusive sponsor of this show is the law firm Condorian Murad. They can guide you and your family in the right direction, helping you to draft a will or set up a revocable trust. They can also create a healthcare power of attorney if needed. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. My parents did that and got taken care of very well. They had a great experience. Be sure to tell them, like my parents did, that the Grant and Danny program sent you, and you will get a discount. KMLawyers.com. That is KMLawyers.com. Danny, we asked this question earlier in the show briefly. We'll come back to it next week and maybe do it in more detail and really drill down. Who do you think ends up second on this team in targets at wide receiver?
I think it's Zacchaeus. I think the way the targets are going to go... is obviously McLaurin is one so far away. That's sort of a beyond discussion. I think second is Eckler. I think third will be that tight end spot kind of combined with Ertz early, maybe send it more as the season goes. Then I think
if Ertz is healthy, I think it'll be Ertz all the way.
Yeah.
But I just can't see him playing 16, 15 games.
I don't either. But, you know, hopefully. I mean, hopefully there's still more to him than I can't remember who called him this, a catch and fall guy. You hope that there's a little bit more dynamic there as a safety valve. Then I think your fourth place in targets will be Olamide Zaccheaus. Is, you know, people will look at it as, is he a number two? I think the role is going to be, you know, slot receiver is his position. But the way I think about one, two, three, whatever, is target share. Is it's third and four, where are we going? Or, you know, who are we designing looks for? I think you might end up with the fourth most looks overall, second for receivers.
As we close in on a preseason tilt against Miami, it's time to look into our player to lock in on. Presented by Baldino's Lock and Key, your one-stop shop for auto keys and fobs. Visit baldinos.com. As we now take the next step in this roster crunch, who are you locking in on?
Ooh, that is a good one. Again, it's hard to avoid it, but it's got to be Jahan Dotson. I mean, this is somebody that we thought last year, you and I did, was gonna lead the team in catches. Maybe second in yards, McLaurin a bit more dynamic when in terms of getting down the football field, but we thought he'd have 80-some catches last year. Gravely disappointed. There's a million reasons why he's now kind of sliding down and is in a position battle at this point, right? I mean, that's where we are, so he needs a good showing.
Bryson Tremaine, the big 6'4" wide receiver, was on the show last week when you were out. Had a good conversation with him. I've been immensely impressed by him in practice. They brought in Martavis Bryant. They clearly are looking for and want some size in that receiver room. There's a sixth spot up for grabs, at least. If they keep seven, there's two spots probably there to be had. Bryson Tremaine, who was on the practice squad last year, made a big catch in preseason game one, is a gem away. You know, he is a four-catch, 42-yard half away from really putting his name squarely into the mix for the last roster spot at wide receiver. So that's a guy that I would call some attention to in that regard. But I think the competition at the back of the wide receiver depth chart is really, really good. Something we didn't get to today, last couple days, that I know you've been chewing on and wanting to talk about, was that Ted Leonsis responded to Kevin Sheehan and Tom Lavero when they were having a discussion on a podcast about the Olympics being in D.C. I'm a big proponent, like I think everybody should be, because when you have the Olympics, the amount of problems that get fixed, the amount of things that don't work and aren't efficient, they have to be solved. Stadium stuff that improves is pretty extensive, but obviously a ton of money goes into it as well. And I know you had thoughts on Leonsis, who is very candid in kind of responding, which he normally doesn't do, directly to media analysis.
Yeah, I thought it was, first of all, good for him. And I mean that. I'm not just saying that sarcastically. I mean that. Good for him for, you know, responding directly and sharing thoughts. It's good to have owners that are accessible, not meaning you can go up and talk to them every day, but that are willing to engage in these matters of public discourse. And this is sort of bigger than any one team or sport or
basically,
otherwise.
It was like a really long, like, word, basically a full Microsoft Word page comment on what he listened to.
On the discussion. So a number of things, though. This is now I put my cynical hat on here after giving him a compliment. He's basically saying, we need somebody who's young, fresh, innovative to step up and take care of these kinds of projects and lead us into this. What he's saying is, by translation, we need someone who's willing to spend a boatload of money to do all the things that'll satisfy the International Olympic Committee to build up all the stuff, the infrastructure that has to happen. In theory, the way people always sell this, talking about the Olympics, is we'll fix all of these things, and by virtue of the 2 weeks that we house the world, and basically all the athletes and everything that comes with it in terms of media and families and everyone extended, we'll then have something that solved all of the problems. And in theory, that sounds great. What happens a lot of time is stuff gets pushed to the side or sort of swept in a certain way. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, temporary situations. I mean, again, this is older, but I visited Barcelona a decade after they had their Olympic Games. And there's an empty stadium, whole rows of, you know, kind of now that are worn down, dilapidated things that were supposed to be housing for everybody. Ended up not being housing for anybody. And it's just this whole suburb and slum that doesn't exist. And it's basically vacant housing.
I'd say Atlanta benefited pretty immensely.
Some cities have. I mean, there's always this push and pull, and economists will agree or disagree about the outlied spending. But he's basically saying in this piece, A, he wants it, which I actually happen to also. But B, we need someone that's willing to sort of lead us into the breach, and a couple of things have to happen. But it's an interesting discussion about if folks would want the Olympics here.
I don't pretend to be smart enough to have all the answers on how to do it or where the money comes from. But if the answer is, hey, Grant, sports fan who loves the Summer Olympics and is from D.C., would it be one of the crown jewel moments of your lifetime to have the globe turn their attention to your backyard for a sporting 2 weeks? I mean, that would just be unbelievable. In addition to the fact that some of the things that don't currently work and aren't helpful would get fixed. Now, there's way more complicated things behind the scenes that have to happen, and I understand that. But I still have hope that inevitably and eventually it does go down. But the difference between L.A. and the ability to hold this event versus D.C. is a pretty massive canyon, I would say. And I can't wait for 4 years from now. I mean, I did not go to Paris. I probably will. I have a hard time believing I wouldn't be in L.A. for some part of the event coming up in 4 years. Let's get you ready for Nationals baseball tonight. We'll give you your starting lineups and pitching matchups presented by The Window Man. Since 1989, The Window Man has been the educational window company. Get your free, no-pressure, in-home estimate at thewindowman.com. We're at their Fairfax showroom.
Behind Patrick Corbin is looking to keep that ERA under 6. Currently sits at 5.98.
Here we go, Patrick. Here we go, Patrick.
What I say, baby?
Come on now.
Leading off and playing right field, Alex Call. Batting second, playing shortstop. See? Check. Abram is batting second in left field. The James Wood, your cleanup hitter and DH, Andrés Chaparro, batting fifth, doing the catching, K-Bear Ruiz, batting sixth, playing second base, Luis Garcia, and at first base, hitting seventh, Juan Yepez, batting eighth and playing third base, Jose Tenya, the Lutzera, batting ninth, your guy, my guy, our guy, Jacob Young.
Last three starts for Patrick Corbin, he's only given up 18 runs in 13 innings.
Okay.
Only 18. So he's been fine.
Yeah.
I would say. Obviously, I kid. 13 hits, 10 runs in the three innings against Arizona.
That's tough, yeah.
Six decent innings against San Francisco, and then he got hit around eight hits, three walks, four earnies, and four walks against the Angels. But as you said, 5.98 ERA. That's the game we're playing with Patrick Corbin the rest of the way. Will that ERA finish under six? Nats weather presented by Pepco. Storm season's here, and they know a little prep makes a big difference. Get storm informed at pepco.com/stormprep. No Ryan Means, show meteorologist Darris Dameron.
At Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia, it's warm. It's 87 degrees here at first, close to first pitch, partly sunny. There will be some cloud cover. Should dip into the high 70s by the end of the game. Stay cool out there in Philadelphia.
Thank you guys for listening to this radio program today and all week long. It means a lot to us. And also, if you don't, then we don't get to keep doing it.
That's right.
And then we have to get real jobs.
I don't want that.
Nobody wants to have a have-to job.
You want me as your coworker?
We like the get-to job. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That's our favorite thing. But seriously, thank you guys for listening. Till tomorrow, Vargas.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.